Hello and welcome to Truth in Journalism, a radio broadcast dedicated to applying the Word of God to current events. Well, today on Truth in Journalism, we're going to talk about niceness. This is the first in a two-part series on niceness, and our story comes from BarryWeiss.com by Barry Weiss and is her resignation letter to the New York Times. Please note that this article has been edited for length. It is with sadness that I write to you that I am resigning from the New York Times. I joined the paper with gratitude and optimism 3 years ago. I was hired with the goal of bringing in voices that would not otherwise appear in your pages. First-time writers, centrists, conservatives, and others who would not normally think of the Times as their home. The reason for this effort was clear. The paper's failure to anticipate the outcome of the 2016 election meant that it didn't have a firm grasp of the country it covers. The priority, in opinion, was to help redress that critical shortcoming. But the lessons that ought to have followed the election, lessons about the importance of understanding other Americans, the necessity of resisting tribalism, and the centrality of the free exchange of ideas to a democratic society, have not been learned. Instead, a new consensus has emerged in the press, but perhaps especially at this paper, that truth isn't a process of collective discovery, but an orthodoxy already known to an enlightened few whose job is to inform everyone else. Stories are chosen and told in a way to satisfy the narrowest of audiences rather than to allow a curious public to read about the world and then draw their own conclusions. I was always taught that journalists were charged with writing the first rough draft of history. Now history itself is one more ephemeral thing molded to fit the needs of a predetermined narrative. My own forays into wrongthink have made me the subject of constant bullying by colleagues who disagree with my views. They have called me a Nazi and a racist. I have learned to brush off comments about how I'm writing about the Jews again. Several colleagues perceived to be friendly with me were badgered by coworkers. My work and my character are openly demeaned on company-wide Slack channels, where masthead editors regularly weigh in. There, some coworkers insist I need to be rooted out of this company if it is to be truly inclusive, while others post axe emojis next to my name. Still, other New York Times employees publicly smear me as a liar and a bigot on Twitter with no fear that harassing me will be met with appropriate action. They never are. There are terms for all of this: unlawful discrimination, hostile work environment, and constructive discharge. I'm no legal expert, but I know that this is wrong. I do not understand how you have allowed this kind of behavior to go on inside your company in full view of the paper's entire staff and the public. And I certainly can't square how you and other Times leaders have stood by while simultaneously praising me in private for my courage. Showing up for work as a centrist at an American newspaper should not require bravery. Part of me wishes I could say that my experience was unique. But the truth is that intellectual curiosity, let alone risk-taking, is now a liability at the Times. Why edit something challenging to our readers or write something bold only to go through the numbing process of making it ideologically kosher, when we can assure ourselves of job security and clicks by publishing our 4,000th op-ed arguing that Donald Trump is a unique danger to the country and the world? And so self-censorship has become the norm. What rules that remain at the Times are applied with extreme selectivity. If a person's ideology is in keeping with the new orthodoxy, they and their work remain unscrutinized. Everyone else lives in fear of the digital thunderdome. Online venom is excused so long as it is directed at the proper targets. Even now, I am confident that most people at the Times do not hold these views, yet they are cowed by those who do. Why? Perhaps because they believe the ultimate goal is righteous. Perhaps because they believe that they will be granted protection if they nod along as the coin of our realm, language, is degraded in service to an ever-shifting laundry list of right causes. Or perhaps it is because they know that nowadays, standing up for principle at the paper does not win plaudits, it puts a target on your back. All this bodes ill, especially for independent-minded young writers and editors paying close attention to what they'll have to do and to advance their careers. Rule 1, speak your mind at your own peril. Rule 2, never risk commissioning a story that goes against the narrative. Rule 3, never believe an editor or publisher who urges you to go against the grain. Eventually, the publisher will cave to the mob, and the editor will get fired or reassigned, and you'll be hung out to dry. And I've always comforted myself with the notion that the best ideas win out, but ideas cannot win on their own. They need a voice. They need a hearing. Above all, they must be backed by people willing to live by them. Sincerely, Barry. So I've read and thought quite a bit about this letter, and also about the response that it's garnered in the wider media. And I must say that to adequately deal with all the material in this letter would take a very long time, time that we don't have for a 15-minute broadcast. Moreover, it isn't as though Ms. Weiss is talking about issues that I haven't spoken at length about in the past, but what I want to talk about today and into the next week is a fundamental breakdown in our culture. Not the breakdown of our culture, which we're seeing in real time, but a breakdown in our culture. There is a cultural presupposition that most of us carry that is being demonstrated to be false, or at least inadequate in our current cultural milieu. And that is the presupposition that being nice is the key to winning friends and influencing people. See, 70 years ago, America broadly agreed on a lot of things. We agreed that the country had a solid foundation that could be improved upon. The culture generally agreed that the Judeo-Christian moral ethic was acceptable as a baseline standard for morality. The culture agreed that truth was objective, observable, knowable, teachable, and demonstrable. Our culture, because we had largely the same epistemological framework and the same basic metaphysical presuppositions, was able to politely disagree on the nuts and bolts of society, because we generally agreed on the basic structure of society. We all agreed and took for granted that we all wanted the same thing. We wanted flourishing for all Americans, guaranteed by equal justice under law. Americans believed that the American system was one that had committed horrid atrocities, but had the power to correct itself and become better and have that change built into the system. So even though the chattel slavery of blacks and whites was a thing, the presupposition, the self-evident presupposition, that all men were created equal and endowed by God with the rights to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, meant that eventually, if Americans strove hard enough to live up to that credo, slavery would be abolished. And it was. It meant that if Americans worked hard enough, equal rights could and would be vouchsafed by law. They were. America had built into the system the very means for its improvement. And since we all generally agreed on this, we presuppose that others disagreed with us in good faith, and so we did our best to be nice. People being nice meant being polite. It meant avoiding unnecessary conflict, and those things are good. It also meant, though, that when people say foolish things, you try not to make them look foolish in public. And that's punching down. It's not nice. When people act like loudmouth jerks, one is supposed to take the higher ground and be nice and try to placate them. This is how Americans behaved. And slowly and certainly, the church accepted that being nice was the best way to be influential. And by nice, again, I don't mean kind. We just mean agreeable, pleasant to be around. Kindness, of course, is a real virtue. Politeness is not really virtuous, but at least it's the most reasonable way of being in society most of the time. But niceness? Simply being agreeable and pleasant to be around isn't virtuous, it's just conflict avoidance. Now, granted, when we all want the same thing, being agreeable isn't bad. Being pleasant can diffuse tension and help make fraught situations a little easier to bear. But there is an ugly side to niceness. In fact, oftentimes, niceness is merely a means of avoiding tough decisions and discussions. Oftentimes, niceness is a form of cowardice. Oftentimes, niceness is a form of cruelty. Niceness is, in essence, the behavior we engage in when we will do anything to be liked and to avoid conflict. We've all seen this kind of niceness in action, right? You're in a meeting at work or at church or with a family member, and somebody says or proposes something that's just utterly ludicrous. And instead of people saying, you know, well, golly, Uncle Melvin, I just don't know that aliens from Saturn kidnapped Kobe Bryant so he could be the starring actor in a docudrama about Queen Victoria. You know, instead, when Uncle Melvin or Sally with the cat sweaters or Rob, the guy who's always talking about the air quotes research that he does, whenever those people tell us something that's laughable or stupendously stupid, we just nod and say, well, that sure is interesting, or it might work, or I'll have to look into that. That's niceness. That's being nice. It's a polite way to end an awkward conversation without conflict. But deep down in our heart of hearts, we know that being nice is sometimes the wrong choice. Sometimes, and I'm speaking especially of settings amongst Christians, sometimes at a church meeting, one obnoxious person with an axe to grind can push through something that 99% of people think is a horrendously stupid idea. But because we don't want to have to get into any ugliness with Sally Cat Sweaters or Google Research Rob, we just let them have their way. And there's the general understanding that it's stupid, but we'll just go along to get along because nobody's going to follow such and such policy anyways. And besides, everybody knows that if you disagree, especially publicly, with the Uncle Melvins of the world, you're in for a long stream of incoherence and ugliness. Worst of all, it'll make the church meeting take even longer, and nobody's really willing to do this. We'd rather accept an unpleasant policy than have an unpleasant discussion. And I hope we can see why this is a very suboptimal solution and why it's actually a form of cruelty to be nice in such a way. So what I'd like to do in this episode is give the reasons why Christians need to stop being nice And next episode, we'll talk about how we should behave instead of being nice. Okay, so why should Christians stop being nice? Now, please remember that I'm using nice to mean agreeable and pleasant by conflict avoidance, avoiding confrontation. I'd like to give two basic reasons why niceness, in the sense of conflict avoidance through agreeableness, is bad. One, it's cowardly. Two, it's cruel. Okay, so let me caveat that claim that niceness is cowardly by saying that when dealing with people who are mentally unstable, avoiding conflict is actually probably the wisest move. You know, if someone breaks into your house and puts a knife to your throat and demands that you admit that Nickelback is a good band, which, you know, would certainly be on brand for a Nickelback fan, FYI, it may be best to swallow your pride and just give him a harumph so he leaves you alone. I mean, it's hard to argue that it is worth dying over to lie about Nickelback being a good band. I mean, you could make the argument. I mean, honestly, frankly, right now it's a toss-up. But anyway, you get the point, right? Like, sometimes when you're dealing with a completely unstable and violent person, just placating them for the time being is acceptable. But like 99% of the time, just being nice to someone for the sake of avoiding conflict is at least marginally cowardly. Why? Because we're accepting something we think is wrong so we don't have to have an argument about it. Now, again, I'm not saying there's never a time for this. Of course, the Bible says don't answer a fool in his folly. Of course there's a time to not answer a fool according to his folly. Of course there is. I'm not saying that every hill is a hill to die on. What I am saying is that consciously permitting a demonstrably false notion, especially in the church, to thrive is cowardly. Again, I'm not saying we have to fight to the death on debatable issues. I'm saying that when you have a deacon publicly saying something like Jesus was just a good man or there is no Trinity, those things need to be addressed. Being nice is often just the camouflage of cowardice because we don't want to be uncomfortable. We permit a lie to fester when we're being nice. Secondly, being nice is not only cowardly, being nice is cruel. Let me explain this. When we refuse to engage with someone saying ridiculous things, we're making a few presuppositions. A, we're presupposing that they cannot be reasoned with. B, we presuppose that they will never have enough influence to do real damage. C, we assume that we're superior and that we can overlook their folly from the heights of our ivory tower. 4, we permit them to continue believing and living based upon beliefs that are false and ridiculous. Being nice when someone else is engaging in folly is very cruel because it infantilizes them and creates a self-fulfilling prophecy of folly because they continue to build up a worldview based on lies. It would be incredibly cruel to knowingly teach children how to do math incorrectly, like to teach somebody how to do something wrong, or to teach them wrong meanings for words, or to teach them that they can breathe underwater, or that they can play in traffic. It's cruel to let children believe lies that they'll build their life on because sooner or later, the very unniceness of reality will punish them for believing lies. Letting someone believe a lie hurts them. And it demonstrates an arrogance and an apathy among the nice that is clearly unchristian. Let me repeat here. Being nice, and by being nice, I mean simply going along to get along, allowing people, not confronting people when it's appropriate to confront them. That's wrong. Nice is different from good. It is wrong to simply permit someone to say and do things that are incorrect simply because we want to avoid conflict. Again, not saying there's never a time for this, but I am saying that normally, under the vast majority of situations, when we permit someone to believe lies, demonstrably false lies, when we permit someone to continue living in patterns that are self-destructive simply because we don't want to engage in conflict, that's cowardly. And it's cruel. It hurts them, and it shows us who we really are. And it's not a good look. Nice is different than virtue. Niceness is different than kindness. Simply avoiding conflict for the sake of avoiding conflict, it's not good, and it's not Christian. Now, I hope that this episode, I've shown that being nice is not being Christian. Simply avoiding conflict is not Christian. Now, next week, we'll talk about how Christians instead should handle conflict, because invariably in this world, we will have conflict. So I hope you'll join us then next week for another exciting episode of Truth and Journalism. Thank you, and may God bless your day to His glory.